Live and direct from Agincourt, Ontario. It's First Stop for your Tuesday morning. Karolnik and Koliakovo face to face. We had a warm embrace. Yes, that rhymed. I am a wordsmith. Good morning, Coco. What's happening?
Good morning, AK. What is happening? Still trying to wake up at 6 a.m.
Well, that's a bad sign. You should have been up for hours preparing for this exciting radio program because there is a lot of excitement coming your way, our audience's way, my way, or the highway. All right, I got to stop rhyming. I don't know what's going on. I'm wearing a Nas t-shirt, and apparently his lyricism has rubbed off on me. Who knew? But we got a jam-packed program.
Are you
going
to go eat some hay down by the bay? What do you say?
I say okay to that idea. Okay, indeed. But yeah, just a jam-packed program on a very busy day in the world of sports. We've got Wimbledon going on behind us. I was texting with our boy Mark Rowe, the face of tennis here at TSN. He gave me some picks for Wimbledon. And you know he's got the inside info, probably texting with Bianca, texting with Felix Auger-Aliassime, maybe with Serena Williams, who's back in action.
40 years old.
And you wonder what she's got left in the tank. That would be quite a story if she made some kind of deep run.
I believe she plays today, too.
Awesome. We'll be watching that for sure. And on the men's side, I mean, you got Novak Djokovic and my personal favorite, your personal favorite, Matteo Berrettini.
Forza
Azzurri. And that's just one small part of the story that we've got cooking on First Up. Another member of the Forza Azzurri team, Andrew Cogliano, joins us at 9:30, Stanley Cup champion. I am curious to know what the last 24 hours have been that man. And I wonder how forthcoming he will be with the truth. It's like, well, didn't sleep. I haven't slept the last 2 days. You know, we were at this establishment, and probably got quite wild, will be my guess.
So I know about 6 or 7 guys on that team, including some coaches. And I've reached out to all of them since the end of the game. And it's not just, hey, you know, like, let's have a conversation. It's just a nice little subtle message saying, hey, man, great to see you. Be a Stanley Cup champion. Congrats on everything. Enjoy it. Depending on who the guy is, you know, you elaborate and you know, or you just say something simple out of respect. And I can say I've only received a response back from half of the guys.
Well, I mean, that says two things. Number one, maybe you're not as tight with them as you had previously thought. And number two, they are in one.
Oh, yeah, big time.
You know, like the morning after you wake up after a big night and you're getting messed, hey, or we want to do this, and you just look at your phone, you're like, no, I can't. Yeah. I can't even respond. But someone calls you, you're like, no, I cannot fathom answering my phone. That must be what Andrew Cogliano was going to deal with around 9:29 today.
Oh, yeah.
When 20 Fingers is ringing him up, and he's like, oh, my God. All right, let's do this. But I think you could also look at it in a different way, in that he's reveling in a Stanley Cup, being a Stanley Cup champion. And that must be an incredible feeling for him, and that's not something that'll go away anytime soon. I'm sure the plans are being materialized as far as the Stanley Cup party goes. Very curious about what's going on there and how big of a role he would have in planning it. You think it's Cogliano, like, this is what we're doing, or maybe what, a significant other, perhaps some of his boys hooking it up? Like, how do you think that works out?
I would imagine that the parties that the players go to are probably organized by guys like Landeskog, MacKinnon, like the leadership group that have been there for a while. I mean, remember, Cogliano was a guy that was traded there at the deadline, so probably doesn't have a feel for the city, but he's probably still very engaged in a lot of the planning. The stuff that's going on in the city and the parade and stuff, players have no say in that. That's all PR. That's all city. Everyone's taking care of that. And I'm not sure when the parade is. It might be today. It might be tomorrow.
No, parade would probably be Thursday, would be my guess. Could be tomorrow, though. Definitely not today.
But I know the common thing that I did receive back from the people that I've reached out to on that team was the word surreal. Like, almost every person said that they can't believe this moment. It's so surreal. Such a great group of guys. Can't believe we did what we all thought that we could do. And now that it's here, it's like, you know, you can't believe that you're hoisting the cup. Like, Eric Johnson was all over social media yesterday with some of the stuff that he was saying on the ice.
His embrace with Nathan MacKinnon.
Embrace with Nathan MacKinnon.
Very big embrace.
His makeout session with the cup on the ice with Landeskog, basically saying, I touched this thing as a kid, so I guess it's not jinxed if you touch it, because they just won it. And, you know, there's that photo that went viral of him sleeping next to it with the cup on his in the bed right next to him.
Yeah. So I love that pic. That is the coolest picture ever.
Right. The best one night stand ever.
It's up there. Say. It's up there.
But look, there's going to be so much more that comes out with the viral videos and the pictures that are shared. And look, this is the time to do it if you're a player. I mean, you know, during the year, you know, you don't really want to spend too much time on social media if you don't have to. But it's moments like this where you really want to share with the world the experience that you're having, the fun that you're having, the memories that you're creating. So I'm pumped to talk to Andrew Cogman.
Oh, it's going
to
be great.
I've exchanged with him very briefly through text messages, and I know he's the pride of Woodbridge, and all of Woodbridge will probably be listening today and wanting to know the details behind the scenes of what he's experienced so far. And I'll be honest with you, we can play a game on the over-under of the hours of sleep that he's received so far.
You imagine night two. Like, night one, probably zero. Last night, you might shut it down early because you've just had a non-stop drinking bonanza. And going two nights
in a row.
Pogliano's up there in the years. He's around my age.
See, here's the thing. Yesterday when I was messaging him in the morning during our show to get him on, I actually tried to get him on yesterday because he was still up at like 7 o'clock in the morning. It's like, hey, man, if you're up, want to come on the show?
And he's like, don't say anything questionable.
No, let's do it tomorrow, because they spent the night in Tampa. They were going out for breakfast as a team, and they were jumping on a plane. I can imagine that plane ride was probably the quietest plane ride, just out of exhaustion.
It's like the flight home from Vegas. You ever go to Vegas and everyone just says nothing left.
Right.
You just shut it down. You wake up, you're in Toronto. You're like, oh.
You try to watch a movie. You try to read a book. Maybe you try to have a conversation, but you just got nothing left in you. And you hit the tap out button until you get home. And literally, that's all probably guys have needed. Like a little power nap, as they would call it. Not 30 minutes, maybe two and a half hours. Recharge the batteries, right back at it once you land in Colorado, as you saw yesterday when they landed in Denver. You know, the ovation that they walked into at the airport with all the fans there and stuff. So, exciting times in Colorado and for the Avalanche.
Blue Jays fans should be giving Kevin Gausman the same type of ovation after the pitching performance he put up yesterday. And considering the last 2 days with Kikuchi on Saturday, Berríos on Sunday, very little production from their starting pitching. The Jays desperately needed a stopper performance. They got just that from Kevin Gausman. They pick up the W against the Red Sox. We'll get into that on the other side. Plus, Kyrie Irving.
Oh,
is the saga over with the Nets? He opts in. Does that mean
phony in the NBA.
He'll play for Brooklyn next year? I don't think it means anything, really, but it's
the only thing we can guarantee that it means is that he's making $37.5 million.
At least.
Year.
Well, yeah, that's exactly. Yes. But the years to come remain undetermined. That's all coming up. Plus, Chris Johnston, our hockey insider, in about an hour and 14 minutes. You're listening to First Up, live on TSN 1050. So it's June 28th. Of course, yesterday was June 27th. Yeah, no, it's almost July.
June 28th?
July is, what, Friday?
Wow.
Yeah, Canada Day is on Friday.
It is.
Wild. The summer is on fire.
I don't know about you, but like, I was going through my summer schedule with our boss, Steph Appolito, last week.
Our one and only boss.
Our one and only boss, yes. And I was looking at the schedule, and I'm like, okay, picking my vacation days in like July and August. And she's like, well, Friday's a holiday. And I'm like, what? Friday's a holiday? I'm like, she's like, yeah, it's Canada Day. I was like, wait a minute. What? Friday's July 1st?
Oh, we're into it, man. We're into
it.
Oh, man. It's flying by this year. And, you know, when you're allowed to leave your home and not be confined by, you know, government restrictions, you know, the days seem to fly by a lot quicker. And that is indeed the case. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, June 27th, in many respects, was a big, big night, because the last two nights they had to endure some abysmal pitching performances from Yusei Kikuchi and from Jose Barrios. So for Kevin Gausman against their AL East rival, Boston Red Sox, yesterday evening, a team that had won seven games in a row, the Jays really needed something of quality from him, and they got it in spades. Seven shutout innings for Gausman, 10 strikeouts, and the Jays win 7-2. A huge game for Gausman. You saw Vladdy Jr. go yard, George Springer went yard, Matt Chapman went yard. A very decisive win for the Jays, and I don't want to overstate its importance because, you know, today's a new day, and Ross Stripling will take on Michael Wacha. And then on Wednesday, you have Alek Manoah on the hill, which is almost a lock win because he does not lose at Rogers Center. But I think for last night in particular, that was a big one, Coco.
A big one in many ways, you know, just because of the struggles of the pitching staff. But the fact that Gausman gave them an outing to protect the bullpen was something that was desperately needed for this Blue Jays team. And I was listening to Blue Jays talk all day yesterday saying how it was imperative that Gausman pitched at least six quality innings yesterday because you didn't want to dive deep into the bullpen. And you know, news yesterday about the Blue Jays improving their bullpen as they're signing Sergio Romo's.
Maybe 10 years ago. Sure, maybe.
Right. Look, he's not the guy that was the World Series closer for the New York Giants, but it's another arm. Right?
Or the San Francisco Giants.
So what did I say?
New York Giants. Wow. That was David Tyree and Mario Manningham.
My bad on that one. The San Francisco Giants. And he's a guy that, you know, struggled this year. I think he had an 11 ERA, but he was pitching for the Royals.
Dude, the guy's washed up. Come on. Sergio Romo's doing nothing for the Jays.
Okay, fine. Say what you want about it. I'm just saying it's another arm.
Sure.
Right? A veteran arm. And Gausman went out, wheeled and dealed against, like you mentioned, the hottest lineup in baseball. And he did it with 10 strikeouts. And you just look at the numbers that this guy's put up against the Red Sox this season. He's got an ERA of 0.43, a whip of 0.81, and he's got 27 strikeouts in 21 innings against the Boston Red Sox this year. So clearly he's got their number, and it was a nice way to kick off a series against a division rival and against, you know, a team that you're looking to make up ground on.
Charlie Montoyo, the manager of the Jays, addressed what it meant to get a good outing from Gausman following the game.
That was huge. I mean, to go, you know, seven innings, that's what we needed, you know, and he gave us that 100 and something pitches, second time that he does that, and now it's like 21 innings, one run against
Charlie's
that ball club over there. That's impressive. We needed that today, and he gave it to us.
Oh, what a sigh of relief Montoyo must have had after that game is over. Like, oh, imagine Gausman gets lit up last night, too, and they go in today, today with their bullpen just everyone's arms in slings after the last 3 days. But fortunately, that was
It sets a bad tone for the series, too, right? You return home. You're playing against an AL rival against the Red Sox. And, you know, good thing that things went in their favor yesterday. But let's listen to Gausman talk about how much this means to him to beat an AL East rival.
You know, I think you just really good team, obviously. And so, you know, it seems like every time, you know, I pitch, I face a really good team because, you know, we're in the American League and we're in the American League East specifically. And so you got to bring that mentality every time that, you know, I think they're probably the hottest team in baseball behind the Yankees right now.
Well, you got lit up by the Baltimore Orioles. They're not a good team, Kevin. But yes, indeed, the American League East does have four good teams. The Jays, one of them, and I don't think anyone's catching the New York Yankees. Did they come back? And I didn't see the final score. I went to sleep before that because it was an early night for yours truly. I did see the Yanks were down 5-2 early, and I saw they were staging a comeback, and they did come back and win that game against Oakland yesterday. Wow, 9-6
runs in the seventh inning.
Well, that'll
by Josh Donaldson.
Josh Donaldson, yeah, he had a very strong finish to that game. They actually came back and won. I had the over 16.5 outs for Jordan Montgomery, and he got lit up in like the third or fourth inning. I'm like, all right, I'm not watching any more of this. But he came through, and so did the Yanks.
Wow, he pitched
and,
it out.
Yeah, he did indeed. And wow, that's a surprising result, man. The Yankees are so vicious. Like, this team, doesn't matter if they're down. Like, you can never count these guys out because their bullpen, by the way, is getting Aroldis Chapman back soon. Like, they didn't even have Aroldis Chapman. They had the Holmes kid was their closer. He's great.
Yeah.
And now you add Chapman to the back of that bullpen, who's still a stud.
Yeah.
Man, that team's absolutely filthy.
Well, when you can mash balls, you know, the way that the Yankees have been able to mash it this year, it's you're never out of any game. You know, just going back to the weekend on Sunday, they're down 3-0. They were getting no hit again.
For like the 16th inning in a row.
For the 16th inning in a row, and they get a quick home run by Stanton. It ignites their offense. Later in that inning, LeMahieu hits a two-run shot. And then in extra innings, it's not like they won it by one with a sac fly or a single. It was Aaron Judge going out and mashing his, I think, league-leading 29th home run of the year for a three-run shot. And I think that the safest bet you can make on a live bet is when the Yankees are down in a game, honestly, to come back and win.
It happens quite frequently.
It does.
It really does.
Absolutely
and
does.
I will talk to ESPN MLB insider Buster Olney in a couple of hours about the Jays, and perhaps Buster's heard some rumblings about the Jays going out and looking for pitching. Sergio Romo is not going to be the answer for the issues with the bullpen. Of course, not the answer for issues with the rotation. And on the subject of issues, Matteo Berrettini, the number two favorite as far as betting goes on Wimbledon, is out of the tournament.
What?
A major issue. He withdraws with COVID.
Oh.
So he's gone. He's out.
Wow.
And that sucks because we're big fans of the Italian stallion Matteo Berrettini.
Yeah, he just pumped his tires again.
And Mark Rowe just texted me, Berrettini is out. Wow. So there you go. That's a big hit to the...
Him and Gary Bettman must have been hanging out.
And maybe Matteo Berrettini and Gary Bettman. It's funny how we talk about COVID in such a different light than we did, like, for obvious reasons, you know, vaccines and everything. But we kind of joke about it now because, you know, everyone knows someone or has had it themselves. And it's a little bit of a different tone, thankfully, which is a good sign. But, yeah, that really sucks that Berrettini is out. And that is... Because I had high hopes for Matteo. I really did. I had him last year in a couple of instances, and I think maybe this was his opportunity to break out and really hit the world stage at another level. But
I'm sorry, not the case. I wasn't laughing at your Berrettini, but there's a message that just came across my desk, and it's from President Biden. I don't know if you saw his...
He sent you a message?
No. It's about a tweet that he shared last night. I don't know if you got a chance to read this, but it says...
I do not follow Joe Biden, no.
Congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche for their first Stanley Cup since 2001. A comeback story for the ages, and one that has made your community so rightfully proud. When did the Colorado Avalanche become a comeback story of the ages?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they did have a bunch of comeback wins. They did have like 46 points 5 years ago. That's a pretty good comeback. What did Donald Trump say about this?
I don't know. I mean, but the Avalanche, they were the best team in hockey this year. How are they a comeback story?
Yeah, I don't
know. They lost four games all playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think Joe Biden, number one, Joe Biden doesn't tweet anything himself. So
fair.
He doesn't even know how to use a phone or a computer. No
a comeback
chance.
Story for the ages?
Yeah, it's a bad tweet from the press secretary.
I mean,
the
am
White
I
House.
Reading this wrong?
Yeah,
or
I don't know.
It's
not Joe Biden sending out those tweets, I can guarantee you. Comeback. How's he doing after falling off that bike, by the way? You
no
see that
idea.
Video?
Did I see it? How did you not see it?
Yeah, that's true. that's a tough video for Joe. So anyways.
Yeah.
Berrettini's out. And apparently the Colorado Avalanche, a comeback story.
We'll ask Cogliano. Hey, are the Colorado Avalanche a comeback story of the for the ages?
Cogliano joins us at 9:30. Maybe Kyrie Irving will make a comeback story for the ages next season. We know he was in and out of the lineup with vaccination stuff this year, injuries. And he's back in Brooklyn, we think, opting in yesterday for his $37 million player option after trying to manipulate the situation behind the scenes with Woj and Shams. Hey, I'm leaving, guys. And nobody believed it. So we'll see where things go with Kyrie. But
I have so much to say about this.
And that's a tease. I need to hear what you have to say about Kyrie Irving. And we'll hear it on the other side as First Up continues here on TSN 1050.
Wow. I've been, struggling to wake up. because I didn't get much sleep last night. This song right here just put a jolt into me.
A jolt. Jolt. Love it. Love that. Well, I mean, let's sip some coffee and heard the song, Where Did You Go? And maybe Kevin Durant was asking Kyrie Irving that question all of last season. The answer, he went nowhere. He just sat at home because he wasn't allowed to play home games for most of the year. But that does not apply this coming season where Kyrie Irving, who has been the star of
drama,
the biggest drama in the NBA for a year and a half, and there was more drama over the last couple of weeks where the media in the NBA is used in a very intriguing way. And I guess it also applies to the
leverage.
NHL. I mean, I think back to the Mitch Marner contract negotiation. The media was used in that too, for both sides, both the Leafs and for Mitch Marner's camp. But with regards to Kyrie Irving, guys like Woj and Shams and Brian Windhorst are issuing reports, and Windhorst yesterday comes out and says the Nets are prepared to lose both Kyrie and Durant if the same thing, and like, okay, sure they are.
Yeah.
And then you hear Kyrie, I'm willing to take $7 million a year from the Lakers.
That never really came from his mouth, though. That came from people around him.
Well, nothing comes from their mouths. Like, right. You're not going to hear anything from Brooklyn or from Kyrie Irving. They use mouthpieces in the media. And that's exactly what was going on behind the scenes for the last week or so. And yesterday, it all came to a head where Kyrie Irving, and I want to read the release, or I guess the comment that he sent over to Shams, who made it official that Kyrie was opting in to his player option. Doesn't mean that he can't be traded or there's a sign and trade or whatever. It does mean that he's making at least $37 million next season. Here's what he says. Normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow. I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall, A11.
So he's basically categorizing himself as different people.
Yeah.
Right?
Because he's
saying different people lead us into tomorrow, which is exactly what...
He's a leader now, right?
It's exactly what he's been trying to do for the last 2+ years of his NBA career. Look, I'm going to come out and say this flat out. He's an absolute pigeon.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt
about
that.
Kyrie Irving is an absolute pigeon. And you know what? I love the way this played out. Because this is exactly what he deserves in this whole situation. He basically agreed to what he agreed to because reality came at him fast. He thought that he was a guy that'd be wanted around the NBA because of his great basketball skills, but clearly nobody wants to deal with everything Kyrie Irving is. And that's exactly how this whole situation played out, because he tried to use the leverage card saying, oh, I'll opt out and play for $7 million. Ooh, these are the teams that I want to go play for. Oh, if there's a sign and trade that's available because I don't want the Nets to lose on anything, these are the teams that I would like to go to. You know what those teams said? Take a hike, Kyrie. Well,
there was one team that was very interested. That was the Lakers, for obvious reasons, because they're like, hey, please take Russell Westbrook's contract.
Right.
And we'll take Kyrie,
hey,
obviously.
You know what? We're interested, but we're only interested if you take Russell Westbrook.
Well, there's no other... I mean, the Lakers would be very interested in having
Kyrie.
Or
you can come and sign for $7 million.
Exactly.
So this is exact... And I give the Nets a lot of credit, because I remember Stephen A. Smith last week just teeing off on this situation and saying... Call his bluff. Don't give in to this guy. Call his bluff and let him show you that he actually cares about winning. Or not even winning. Cares about playing the game of basketball. Because clearly for the last 2 years, he's had other things that have clouded his decision making, or at least his care about playing the game of basketball. And look, again, can't judge him on his vaccine stance. You know, in the bubble, he decided not to show up. But for everything that Kevin Durant gave up to choose Kyrie to be the guy that he was going to go down this lane with in Brooklyn to try to win a championship there, he's been the guy that has let Kevin Durant down. And he's the guy that right now has to show that he's committed to Durant and committed to winning. So I'm really not surprised that he did this, because he'd be the biggest idiot in the world to... walk away from $37 million guaranteed
to try to prove a point to the Nets.
That would be it. He did walk away from $18 million guaranteed because he didn't want to get the vaccine. So I wouldn't rule anything out with Kyrie Irving. And
so I love what the Nets did. The Nets basically put their foot down and said, look, you've given us nothing these last 2 years. It's time for you to get your head out of you-know-what and just worry about playing basketball for us.
I'm not sure there's ever been a player who has generated more conversation, even here in Toronto, I mean, certainly in the ESPN, you know, the national media in the States, who has accomplished less. Like, think of the last 5 years of Kyrie Irving's career. I mean, even let's look at the series the Nets played against Boston. Like, he was irrelevant in that series. And after the first game where he played really well, he was garbage.
Right.
And Boston was identifying him as a defensive liability.
Absolutely.
And they got swept. So for Kyrie Irving, a guy who is indisputably one of the top offensive players in the NBA, for sure.
He's talented.
Oh, he's probably 27 a game.
Nobody discredits him for that.
But he has missed 53% of Brooklyn's games since he joined the team.
Right.
53%. He has played in the entirety of his NBA career, just 71% of the games that the team, whatever team he's playing for, whether it's Cleveland or Boston or Brooklyn, that his team has played. So this is a guy who has a penchant for injury and a penchant for crazy stuff going on in his head. So he's very unreliable. That being said, there were people, including you and I, were talking yesterday and like, this is kind of disappointing. Would have loved to see Kyrie go somewhere else and continue the drama.
What's going to happen with Durant?
I think this is the most dramatic situation that could have possibly ensued. So you've got Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons on the same team. Ben Simmons is, in many respects, as unreliable as Kyrie Irving, right?
No kidding.
So if you're Durant, you're sitting there and be like, oh, God, I have Kyrie on one side, Simmons on the other. In theory, it could go really well. It's possible. These guys are extremely talented players, Kyrie and Simmons, but extremely unreliable at the same time. I think Brooklyn is they've taken over from the Lakers as the biggest draw, the biggest media intrigue by far.
Because there is
so much cooking behind the scenes with these guys, and they're so... It's just such an incredible situation, and there's so much talent, but there's also so much drama. I can't wait to see how it plays out. They could be awesome, or they could be an absolute tire fire. I have no idea.
Okay, let's be honest here. Do you actually think that Kyrie Irving is going to play a full season without bringing attention to something else in his life that he'll concentrate on other
or
than basketball?
Or get hurt. Yeah, oh, definitely not. Like, I think Kyrie, like, there's something
there is going to be something that comes up this year where Kyrie Irving attaches himself to and says, no, I'm not doing anything because this is what I believe that this is something I need to stand behind, and this is my focus instead of basketball.
Probably. That's a safe assumption.
And look, if that's what he calls leadership, fine. Whatever it may be. But dude, you're paid to play basketball. And there's people in that organization like Steve Nash, like Kevin Durant,
who apparently hates Kyrie Irving, and they hate each other. Nash and Kyrie.
Do you blame him?
Some reports that Kyrie said a couple things to Nash, and they're
not exactly best buds. You remember when Nash got hired as a coach? He was on a podcast talking to Kevin Durant, saying, "Oh, we don't need to coach. We could run this organization.
Yeah, that
is true. We could coach this team." Before Nash even coached a minute of that team. Look, I love it.
It's amazing for me.
I love that this happened because it shows Kyrie that in his eyes, he's not wanted anywhere else like he think he is. To be honest, the only place he's wanted is in Brooklyn with Kevin Durant.
And Los Angeles. The Lakers would love to have Kyrie Irving.
It was situational.
You think
if Kyrie Irving was a free agent that the Lakers are making him their top priority? No chance.
I mean,
LeBron played with Kyrie in Cleveland, and Kyrie turned his back on LeBron.
He did, but LeBron turned his back on many people over the years and always seems to reconcile in the end. Another guy who signed yesterday was John Wall. You may remember John Wall as being good like 5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, but he's had a ton of injuries and he had a $47 million contract for this year.
Like, this is the problem I have with the NBA. John Wall is what? A top 40 player in the NBA?
I think John Wall, I think he was a 2017 or 2018 with the Wizards, was amazing. Amazing. And then he signed that huge deal. And then he got hurt, and the wheels fell off. And
how does a guy like John Wall make $47.5 million?
Well, I just told you. When 2018 season with Washington, he was like a fringe MVP candidate at some points in the season. So they gave him that
money. Makes me want to vomit.
Well, I mean, Washington's about to give Bradley Beal the same type of contract. So you'll be vomiting when Bradley Beal signs for $240-something million. But Wall gets a buyout from Houston. So they pay him 40 of the $47 million. And then he goes and takes his talents to the L.A. Clippers. So it'll be Wall with Kawhi and Paul George. I mean, for the Clippers, it's a no-brainer. You take a stab at John Wall, a guy not long ago was a top 20 player.
For the mid-level exemption, whatever
it is. That's exactly it. I mean, it's a great deal for the Clippers, and I think it's a great fit for John Wall, too. You go to a team that, I mean, let's just say...
is competing to win.
Sure, and...
instead of a team like Houston, where you're watching a rebuild happen in front of your eyes, you weren't even going to be a guy they wanted to play.
I am surprised that Houston just lets him walk. And it's just, why not just keep him and see maybe he's able to become good again? He rehabilitates his... Maybe he just had no interest in Houston. He's like, you know what? Just get the hell out of here. Like, let's move on.
Clearly, Houston had no interest in him either. Yeah. I mean, they were hoping he wasn't going to opt in on his $47.5 million deal. And they're basically like, okay, well, he opted in. We're going to pay him no matter what. So we might as well save $6 million and just buy him out not to be here. Because that's basically what
The NBA, where $40-something million dollars thrown around to good players.
We're going to pay you $40 million to not play for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, where
it's
do I sign?
Thing. It's a beautiful thing. Yes. Well, the man who makes $47 million here at 10 is... TSN is Arad Asvandi. He is our producer, and he will join us next.
He makes $47 million?
He's underpaid. Look at the guest list we have today. What? Andrew Cogliano, Olney.
It is a star-studded
Alex Burrows, the assistant coach in Montreal, and part of the vaunted line with Daniel and Henrik Sedin for a long time in Vancouver. Those two going into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
That guy made bank. Playing next to those
did
two
he
guys.
Ever we'll get to the story how it all began for Alex Burrows playing with the Sedins, who are now Hockey Hall of Famers, and so was Daniel Alfredson. I don't know so much about Daniel Alfredson being
Daniel
Dude,
Alfredson.
I'm a Toronto kid who grew up in the early 2000s. I hate Daniel Alfredson. Like, yeah, you were there.
The Leafs own the Senators. Why do you hate him?
That hit from behind on Darcy Tucker, I'll never forget. And then he scores like 5 seconds later. Ugh. And then he mocks Matt Sundin with a fake stick throw in the crowd.
We should get Darcy Tucker on the phone.
I wonder how Darcy Tucker feels about Daniel Alfredson. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow.
He says he listens to us every morning.
I would hope so. On his way up into his golf course, playing with Brian Hayes. I mean, you got to dial it in, TSN 1050. And you're not going to want to dial it out, because Arad coming your way next. Time for the morning scroll here on First Up. Aaron Karolnik, Carlo Koliakovo, and our producer, Arad Asfandi. What are we scrolling today, Arad?
Well, let's start with celebrity boxing, something that was really popular in the 90s, died down, and, you know, thanks to the Paul brothers, it's getting really popular again. And the latest celebrities to face off against each other, two NFL running backs, one's a Hall of Famer, the other one not really. Adrian Peterson will face Le'Veon Bell on July 30th in Crypto.com Arena in a boxing match.
That's going to Crypto.com Arena. That's like, where does that rank as far as the event goes? Like Le'Veon versus AP.
It's on the undercard. Yeah. It's probably the co-main event. The main event is, and this will show my age here, two guys I have no idea who they are.
With
YouTube
boxing.
Star Austin McBroom versus another YouTuber, and Essen Gibb.
Yikes.
You guys are...
Crypto.com is in L.A., right?
That's like where the Lakers play.
Staples Center, old Staples Center.
Yeah, old Staples. I cannot believe that's an event that they host. Like, I thought that would be like, you know, at like some barn in like
Reseda. They're trying to obviously blow it up to be bigger than it is. I mean, look, Adrian Peterson versus Le'Veon Bell. Like, Le'Veon Bell has basically taken this stance of this tough guy who wants to beat everybody up, because there was a challenge that he issued to Jake Paul when Jake Paul was looking for his next opponent. And you're looking at Le'Veon Bell, and this guy was like an undersized running back in the NFL. Okay, yeah, he was a good one, but I never really, you know, projected him to be a
a boxer or a fighter or anything like that.
He's a football player, of course not.
So, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what to make of all these stupid celebrity boxing
matches. Cash grab.
Of course it is. And good for them. I mean, they probably both need it. Probably. Remember Le'Veon Bell? We talk about Kyrie Irving being an idiot.
But he got paid by the Jets, Le'Veon Bell.
He did, but he also sat out a full season when he was supposed to make $15 million.
How stupid was that? My goodness.
You know?
What an idiot. Just in his absolute prime when he was great. Mm-hmm. Great. Remember he was like that dual threat, could run, caught a ton of balls.
Catched a ton of balls.
Like, dude was a stud, and he just, I'm going to wait for him. I'm like, you're a running back, dude. Like, that's not how it works, and probably never will be. But anyways, good for Le'Veon. He's getting his money in other ways. Apparently boxing, and people are going to pay for that? Like, that seems like lunacy to me. But we'll be watching on our illegal stream. What else we got, Rod?
I don't know what you're talking
Who do you guys
about.
Have, Le'Veon versus AP?
I mean, I don't really want to cheer for either of them. AP is a bad dude, right? And doesn't he like beat his kid or something? Like, I think I stay away from that one. No picks for me.
Yeah,
you have to wait to pay for my picks on TSN.
Hopefully, they knock each other out.
Yeah, exactly. Simultaneous knockout.
Yeah.
Oh, that classic GIF of the two boxers knocking each other out.
Isn't that a famous Simpsons sort of scene when Homer's basically trying to take up boxing, where he just sits there and takes punches until somebody tires themselves out.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't remember who his opponent was, but I remember that episode for sure.
Yeah, Dedrick Tatum, which was their standing for Mike Tyson, basically. And Homer coming to the ring with Why Can't We Be Friends is still one of the funniest
things.
Oh,
the scene I'm thinking about is from Step Brothers, when they're fighting on the lawn with... They have that, they whack each other in the face at the same time with the whatever bat or...
Oh, yeah.
Shovels.
Shovels, that's what it is, yes. And they knock each other out. Yes, Step Brothers, what a movie.
What a classic, all-time classic. Speaking of classics, today is the anniversary of the 2006 NBA draft, where the Toronto Raptors selected first overall.
Andrea, my boy.
Andrea Bargnani,
baby. Love it.
And then also anniversary of the 2007 draft, where the Portland Trailblazers selected Greg Oden first overall.
And that was the Durant draft, wasn't it?
Kevin Durant went second overall, yes.
Wow, that is crazy. You know, we could... Did you see that list of the Sacramento Kings that came out after the NBA draft of the players they've missed on with their next?
Well,
so with their picks and who went next?
Marvin Bagley going second, and they pass on Luka and Trae Young most recently.
But, right. Yeah. What was the Jimmer Fredette one? That was Damian Lillard?
I think maybe. Well, no, Damian Lillard.
Klay Thompson.
Went,
yeah,
it was Klay Thompson. Yeah. That's who was. And Damian Lillard
they
was the other one.
They looked at two shooters and they said, you know what? This one's going to be better than the other one.
Jimmer Fredette was a damn good college player. One of my favorite college players ever.
Well, Jimmer.
With regards to Greg Oden, I mean, if you go back and watch Greg Oden at Ohio State, you understand why he went number one overall. The dude was playing with a broken hand.
He was a
beast.
His
dominant hand was broken, and he was still racking up like 18 and 12 every night. And he may have been 35 years old playing in college. At least he looked like it. But I have no issues with Portland taking Oden. His body just fell apart. Just bad luck. And you think about Durant, who was incredible at Texas. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, there was questions about his physique. And how
Westbrook
felt.
Westbrook went three that year?
Or
the following year?
Al Horford went three.
So 20 Fingers just posted a picture. So in 2011, Jimmer Fredette went 10th. Klay Thompson went 11th. In 2012, T. Robertson, I don't know his first name.
Thomas Robinson.
Thomas Robertson went number 5. Damian Lillard went number 6. And in 2018, Marvin Bagley went number 2 and Luka Doncic went number 3.
Oy.
Wow. Could you imagine if the same person...
Not the best.
If the same person or the same scouting staff was responsible for these same drafts... How do you keep your job?
It's tough to rationalize that. And I guess you could look at Andrea Bargnani in a similar light because number
Aldridge.
2 was LaMarcus Aldridge. And Bargnani had some good years. I mean,
Colangelo wanted to go with the European feel for this team because he wanted to attract
European
fan base.
Andrea Bargnani is in the NBA today. His game translates so much better than it did back in 2006 or whatever. I mean,
he's a better version of Kristaps Porzingis.
I think they kind of like maybe like Gallinari, or maybe better. I don't know. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I think Bargnani, his game would certainly translate today in today's game much better than it did back then. Quickly, Rob, we got one more time for one more.
And the final Morning Scroll item is, well, Lorenzo Insigne was announced yesterday, guys.
Forza,
yes.
Bang! And,
what must be encouraging for TFC fans is Bill Manning saying, we are not done. We will make at least two or three moves to improve the club, which is in need of improving.
Wow.
How's TFC doing so far this year?
Mediocre, to say the least.
Very mediocre. Oh, okay. They've had some injuries, though. They've had some injuries, and obviously they're missing their star
Lorenzo
signing Insigne. And I think he's set to make his debut, what, July 9th? I believe.
I think so, yeah. I think it's most likely this weekend. It won't be like tomorrow.
Maybe Insigne will be at Andrew Cogliano's Stanley Cup party in Woodbridge.
Maybe.
Could that be?
They're shutting down the town of Woodbridge for it. So.
And deservedly so. We'll get the story from Cogliano at 9:30 when he joins us. Stanley Cup champion Andrew Cogliano of the Colorado Avalanche. So looking forward to that.
Speaking of Stanley Cup, did you hear the Spanish call of the Stanley Cup?
I have not. I actually did see the clip was sent. But they did not click on it. So let's hear it.
Love the different language calls. So we will
do that on the other side. And we'll be joined by Chris Johnston in less than an hour. His first up rolls on the second hour next.